All right, we are rocking. Yes, okay, well, we are in week four of basically talking about prayer. As I've shared with you all, we're getting all of this, or most of this information, from a book called Praying Like Monks, Living Like Fools, by a gentleman by the name of Tyler Staton. He is a pastor out of Portland, Oregon. For those of you that didn't know that, just for the record, or Oregon, somewhere up there. But the idea, right, kind of the overall theme, is this phenomenon of prayer. And he has this at the very beginning of the book, in which he basically states that prayer invites you to learn to listen to God before speaking. We talked about that, about reducing hurry. To ask like a child in your old age, to scream your questions in an angry tirade, to undress yourself in vulnerable confession, and to be loved completely and totally loved in spite of everything. So this week, we are going to be talking about two areas. One is called the middle voice, which, I'll be honest, I had never heard of this. This was quite unique to me. I'm curious if you've heard of it as I go through it. The other is laboring in prayer. Laboring in prayer. So we'll talk through both of these. So when he talks about the middle voice, his subcontext, if you will, is prayer as participation. So Eugene Peterson, defines the middle voice this way. The assumption of spirituality is that always God is doing something before I know it. So the task is not to get God to do something I think needs to be done. Thank you, that's me. But to become aware of what God is doing so that I can respond to it and participate and take delight in it. Right? Thinking about that. I know everybody's like, okay, let me think through that just for a second. Because for those of you that took English, which I'm sure I can't remember when I started diagramming sentences. Is that like a seventh grade, eighth grade thing, right? Mrs. Stokes at T.J. Rusk Middle School. Yes, I was one of the bust people, just for the record. I would get on a bus every morning and drive out to Cedar Springs and Inwood on the other side of Love Field. Yeah, we didn't hear a lot because the planes would just, I mean, literally, we were, you know, a half a mile from Love Field. Anyway, I don't know where I went on that, but just for the record, Barefoot Sanders, if that rings a bell to anybody, that was me. I was in the middle of that. So the middle voice, so we grew up, right, or English, let's back up, sorry, we didn't grow up this. English has the active voice, right? Which is, I am the actor. I initiate the action. I give advice. And it has the passive voice. I am being acted upon, right? I receive the action and I am given advice. The ancient Greek, though, actually had what's called the middle voice. So when you look at, you know, the Lord's Prayer, that's what Jesus is referring to in terms of as he's praying, right? Your will be done, Lord. The middle voice is, I take advice. I am an active participant, but the action did not begin with me. I am joining the action of another. So Staton has a great little note about this, where he says, praying in the middle voice is a participation in the action of God. It is an acknowledgement of our place in his created order, recipients of his action and responders to it. And I love this analogy. God's activity is like the current of the Mississippi River. We can agree with it, enter into it, and swim freely along with the water's pull.
We can also deny his activity, swim against the current, and fight it with flailing of our arms and kicking of our feet. Either way, we're going with the river. No one wins a fight against that kind of current. You can agree with it and cruise along unassisted, or you can fight it and be pushed along exhausted. The one thing you can't do, though, is pretend the rushing river current is a still water pond.
What page is that on?
That is on page 134. And I just have the vision of a backstroke, right? Just kind of going along, right? But if you're like me, and I'm curious, number one, what do you think about that? Number one, I'm curious. Anybody ever hear the middle voice before besides Chuck? He doesn't count. Kathleen? Maybe? Okay. All right, fair enough. But if you're like me, right, I tend to think about things when I go to the Lord in prayer. I want things done. I want, right? I mean, I've shared this with you guys, right? I'm a doer. I like to do things. I get things done. So I want God to do the things I want God to do, right? I'm a doer. I want to initiate. I want to be the active voice. I want to go forward. He's making me step back and think about this. Wait a minute. God's already doing things. Don't I need to come alongside him? Don't I need to recognize what he's doing? That's the idea. So why the middle voice? Kind of where I was going, right? Statton says, the aim is not to get God in on what I think he should be doing. Rather, the aim of prayer is to get us in on what God is doing. Become aware of it, join it, and enjoy the fruit of participation. Prayer is the recovery of our role in God's created order, the recovery of our true identity, and the relationship that defines that identity to us. And we've talked a little bit about this in the past, right? We've talked a little bit about, you know, the creative order and how, you know, sin came into that order that broke that communication with God. And prayer is our way to come back together. Prayer, obviously, through the resurrection of Christ, right? But then we have this ability to communicate, to go back in and spend that time with God. That communication line is open again. And I think that's where he's going with this, recognizing that God is active, right? We need to come alongside and swim with the current, not create our own current, right? Not deny the currents even there and not go against the current. Mary, he points out that Mary was actually a great example of this. Could somebody read Luke 1, 28 to 38 for me? Anybody have that up? I see Nathan looking quickly. Yes, please.
And coming in, he said to her, "Greetings, favored one. The Lord is with you." But she was very perplexed at this statement and kept pondering what kind of salutation this was. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will have no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" The angel answered and said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. And for that reason, the Holy Child shall be called the Son of God. And behold, even your relative Elizabeth has also conceived a son in her old age. And she who was called barren is now in her sixth month. For nothing will be impossible with God." And Mary said, "Behold, the bondslave of the Lord. May it be done to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her.
So what does Mary do, right? Mary agrees. She consents. She says, "Lord, I am your servant. May your word to me be fulfilled." And I think that's one of the things that spoke to me in terms of knowing that there's an element there of consenting. And I think we've talked a little bit about the control element. And let me read this little paragraph to you at the top of page 139. Do you know this life of consenting participation? As time passes and your own lack of control becomes apparent, are you growing in resilience or in anxiety? Are your prayers mostly the entitled demands of the active voice, insisting on deliverance from circumstances that don't align with your plan? Or might your prayers be the apathetic mumblings of the passive voice, acting out a part in a spiritual drama in which you don't actually believe you have a consensual participatory role? Discover prayer in the middle voice. God is sovereign, but His is participatory sovereignty. The better a man learns to pray, the more deeply he finds that all his stammering is only an answer to God speaking to him. So when we think about this consenting participation, right? The question becomes, as your time passes, and I think this comes with just being on this earth, to be quite honest with you. So many times we want to control things. So many times we want to own it, and we want to fight against that current because we think we know better. Right? I've got a plan, God, and you need to follow it. That doesn't seem to work really well, right? And so it to me, it starts to become this, well, wait, am I growing in my resilience and consenting and recognizing that God is with me and I need to come alongside Him? Or am I growing in anxiety? I've shared with you guys, being a grandparent is so much better than being a parent. For me, at least, it's been fabulous because, I mean, on the one hand, right, I'm not stressed out because it's not my kid. It's my grandson, so I love him and I care about him and I want the best for him. But I also know that I can step back and it's going to be okay, right? As a parent, you want to control it, or at least I did. Let me back up and just confess there, right? You guys know that. Barb's looking at me like, oh yeah, right, exactly, right. Anyway, so I think that to me was a huge thing, right? Recognizing that. My prayers, right? Are your prayers mostly the entitled demands of the active voice? Are you praying for circumstances in your life that don't align with your plan? Right? God, this isn't my plan. I want this. What is the plan? Or are they passive, right? Do you not recognize that you have this role, that you're involved? Those are the two things when it comes to the middle voice. All right, so let's move on.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. And last week we talked about intercession, right? And praying for others and our participatory role in that. And we're actually getting ready to talk a little bit about praying for the lost as well. There is, I think at the end of the day, right, I think you can apply the middle voice to others, right? What is happening there, Lord? Right. I'm praying that your will, will continue. I'll pray for the individual that they'll recognize that you're working in their life. I think that would be the way I would apply that from that perspective. Right. Versus, gee, God, they really should be doing this. Right. Which is sometimes I fall into that trap as well. Right. Especially with my wife. She really should be doing these things. She's not here. It's what she gets for not being. No, I'm just kidding.
We have the main man this weekend, so she's staying home with him. So let's talk about laboring in prayer and praying for the lost. Anybody know the story of D.L. Moody? I mean, I know of him. Well, I'm going to read it to you because I thought it was very interesting. D.L. Moody, a late 19th century traveling preacher, was one of the most influential evangelists in the modern church era. He was one of nine children born to a single mother who struggled to keep food on the table. A shoe salesman in Boston with only a fifth grade education. Moody came to faith at 17 and began preaching to overlooked and marginalized teens shortly afterward. He went on to travel the world, drawing crowds as large as 30,000 to hear his sermons. Many consider him to have been the greatest evangelist in the 19th century. His entire evangelistic strategy was prayer. That's it. In an oft-told legend, many before me have recounted that Moody famously carried a list of 100 names in his pocket every day of his adult life. 100 friends who had no relationship with Jesus. Moody's labor of love was secret, hidden prayer on their behalf. He pleaded with God to reveal himself to each of them in a way they could perceive and receive as eternal love. He prayed by name for their salvation. When he died, 96 of the names on that list had become answered prayers. A 96% success rate in prayer is not bad. I'd take those odds any day of the week, but it gets better. At Moody's funeral, the four remaining names were each in attendance. Those four friends were independently so moved by the memorial service that they all came to faith at his funeral. It's a great story, isn't it? I had never heard that story before. Yes. Yes.
I wonder then if he knew the Moody story in that, or if he just started to
mentor. That's a good point. Yeah.
That's what he did, basically.
So Terry, for those of you that haven't read the book, Staton, as a young man,
like 13 or 14,
decided, I can't remember if somebody challenged him.
Mentor
challenged him to pray for his school. And so literally every day, he took the directory, the school directory, printed out, and walked around the school praying for the school in the summer, right? To the point where his mom got so sick of him. Well, she was tired of him going and praying because she had to take him to school every day at 6 a.m. or something, right? It's a great little story. But you're right. You wonder if that, you know, if he knew about Moody before then or after. I don't know. He didn't say. But it was interesting. So, I think the point being is, and where we're going to get in this is, there's this labor of love, a labor of prayer, as it pertains to people's salvation that I don't know about you, but I tend to forget about. If you don't make it front and center, you don't think about it. And it's very easy to do, right? Because we're off praying for other things. We're worried about our circumstances. We're worried about our friends that know the Lord and are trying to work through things. I mean, that's part of the challenge. So let's think about Elijah. And I do want somebody to read 1 Kings for me, 18, 41 through 45. But we're going to talk about the buildup of that, right? So for those of you, think about, most people probably know the story of Elijah, but just to be safe, right? Ahab is the king of Israel. Israel's pretty much forgotten about Yahweh, and they're following Baal, right? Or Baal. Sorry, B-A-A-L. I don't know which one. Anyway, doesn't matter. They're in the midst of about a 3-year drought or 3.5-year drought,
We're in the midst of what, 20 days? and my my yard is burning up as we speak, right? Can't wait to get my water bill. A challenge ensues, right, between Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal, right? I love this story, right? Because he basically makes fun of them and gets them to cut themselves and all that stuff. And what happens? Fire, you know, Elijah prays to God one time. God sends fire down, completely takes up his altar, right? Takes everything, including all the water he poured on it, everything. And then Elijah, of course, then they take the prophets of Baal and slaughter them. But what was interesting is that God uses the fire to demonstrate his dominion. But now let's look at what happened after that, right? This rebirth that occurs. So if somebody has 1 Kings for me, 18, 41 through 45, can you read it? Wes, go ahead.
Now Elijah said to Ahab, "Go up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of the roar of a heavy shower." So Ahab went up to eat and drink, but Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he bent down to the earth and put his face between his knees. And he said to his servant, "Go up now, look toward the sea." So he went up and looked, but he said, "There's nothing." Yet Elijah said, "Go back 7 times. And when he returned the 7th time, he said, "Behold, a cloud as small as a person's hand is coming up from the sea." Elijah said, "Go up, say to Ahab, harness your chariot horses and go down so that the heavy shower does not stop you." Meanwhile, the sky became dark with clouds and wind came up and there was a heavy shower, and Ahab rode and went to Jezreel.
So Elijah just had this amazing event, right? One time, put the 450 prophets, right? Put them to rest, if you will, for lack of a better term. And then what does he do? He goes back up and prays. Why do you think it took 7 times? Why did it take 7 times for the rain to come? I mean, I don't really have an answer, but I'm curious if anybody has any theories behind that.
Perfect number in the Bible.
Well, okay, yes, that's true. That's true. Statton takes it that it's kind of this notification, right, in terms of recognizing that this was the rebirthing of the city. Think about it. No rain for 3.5 years. That city was in dire need. I'm sure no animals had any food because nothing could grow, right? You just got to figure they were in dire straits. I mean, water is so basic to our daily life and everything that lives, that's huge, right? And so Statton's kind of going down this path of you recognize that prayer, this kind of prayer that brings new life, right? There's an element there that it's a prayer of labor, a prayer of love. It's going to take time. And he identifies these three areas. Sorry, these colors, I've got to change this color scheme because can y'all read that? So he brings up that throughout the Bible, we see amazing results of the Spirit of God providing new life, right? So first we have Sarah and Abraham, right? She can't birth. She's, what, 90 years old. So it's kind of a medical miracle, if you will. So there's new life in the redemption through Sarah. We see a new life in the incarnation through Mary. And then we also see new life in the resurrection of Jesus, right? Through the Holy Spirit, that brings life. And Statton says, God doesn't only dream of a church on fire, God dreams of a city reborn. Think about it. Think about the entire end-to-end story of the Bible. We start out with perfection in the Garden of Eden. We end with perfection, right? And all coming back in heaven, right? With God, right? Being in the presence of God. A mountain of prayer is the only way to go from one to the other. But if you ascend this mountain of prayer, proceed with caution, because here's the bit you likely already know by experience. Prayer for the lost is slow and unglamorous. Do you guys remember the guy that came, Randy Newman, a couple of years ago? I thought his message was amazing, where he referred to praying for the lost or thinking about the lost as an alphabet, right? That somebody is at A, let's say they're completely ignorant. That what'd you say? Thank you. That's very good, right? And then Z, they come to accept Christ. And he was pointing out that it's a journey, right? It's a journey. And in a little bit, our relationship, our approach to this is to think about moving somebody down that journey. And your job may just be to come along and get them from M to O. See, I got that right. I didn't mess that up, right? But M to O. And somebody else may take them from O to Q, and right, Q to Z, et cetera. You know, to me, that's what came to my mind as it related to that, right? And so you think about prayer for the lost is unglamorous. You think about Elijah, he called down fire from heaven, and boy, that had to be big time, right? He's got to be thinking really good about himself. He got a stir in the crowd. His name's on every tongue. Praying a downpour by the city, though, by contrast, what did he do? He goes up to the mountain by himself, right? We think about Christ when he was on the earth. He went up and prayed by himself on a regular basis. He isolated himself. So it's this secret labor of prayer, not not the public spectacle of fire that we are told to imitate. And I think that's the thing we need to be thinking about from a labor of prayer perspective. And what does that mean? So let me read one more section for you where he says, Elijah's story to participate in prayer life is an invitation for us to be found by God on the mountain of prayer, to join with the Holy Spirit in groaning for new life. It requires us to be persistent and single-minded and to develop an acquired taste for the unglamorous. To accept this invitation requires us to display a stubborn willingness to pray through the waiting, a supernatural labor of willful agony for the promise of new life. You know, one of the things I love about this church is it's multi-generational. And the beauty of the multi-generation, the older, let's just say the older generation in our church.
More experience.
Seasoned.
Wow, man. Thank you. They are prayer warriors, right? I don't know. I sit on the elder board. I get a note from these three men about once a quarter that have prayed for me. And that means so much to me. It just brings a comfort and just an appreciation to recognize, and we've talked about this before, right? The most powerful thing we can do for ourselves and for others is to pray. How many times do we want to control it? Just pray. We need to pray about it. Okay.
Paul,
yes, ma'am.
Well, two things. One, there was a woman in the church that Nathan and I were married in that his mother and two other women, this was way before I probably even understood intercessory prayer. She was not a believer, and they loved on her for 20 years.
Wow.
They did stuff. She knew they were believers, and at the end of 20 years, I don't know why, that day, she came to know the Lord. And so I was in that to see a part of that 20-year time period.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow. I mean, the thinking then, it was like, man, that sure took a long time.
Mm.
I mean, that was my thought.
Yeah.
but this is and I have matured, I would hope, in 50-something years of faith, but this is a whole different way of looking at it. And that's a good reminder of the A to Z, because I have a nephew that is not a believer, and I spent a lot of years with him, and I told him I felt like I had a relationship with him that I should be allowed to speak truth into his life. And so he knows where I stand. I've given him books. We talk. And, you know, there's not a week I don't pray, but now my prayer is different. His sister, who's a very strong believer, as her whole church, she's on staff at a church praying for him. Now my prayer is, Lord, send somebody, because it's probably not going to be me. Just do something in his life from sending somebody that makes those seeds grow, I guess, to get disease.
Yeah.
That's a really good reminder of that, mm-hmm. because, I mean, this whole thing's been going on for probably 15 years.
Right. And you think of, you hear about the stories. I can't remember who in this room. Somebody I thought had a parent that was dying and kind of deathbed confession and came to know the Lord. Maybe I just made that up. Anyway, but you hear about those things. It has. But you hear about those things and you forget that people were pouring into that individual's life ahead of time. Right. There was a lot going on before that. But we tend to think about just the cool, the X to Z type, right, from that perspective. So as I've shared with you before, right, the book has these practice sessions at the end of each chapter, and I've been going over these with you all. So the first one about middle voice is think about and use in your prayer life, use Mary's prayer as your template, right? Lord, I am your servant. I recognize that my identity is in you, Christ. Remind yourself that you are both a servant from a humility perspective. Think about it, right? I am your servant, Lord. But also from a security perspective. You know that you're a servant of the Lord, right? That you've got Christ living in you. There's an element of confidence and security to that, but also humility from that perspective. And then, may your word to me be fulfilled, right? How can you consent to the work of God is acceptance and participation, right? I need to be willing to participate. Am I going to swim along in the current of the Mississippi River? Can you actually swim in the Mississippi? I guess you can. I don't know.
No.
Okay, well, fair enough. Well, there you go.
I lived on the Mississippi. No.
No. Okay. Fair enough. So you definitely can't swim against it, right?
You need a raft.
You need a raft, right. And then on the praying for the lost, ask God, and maybe you've already think about this. Ask God to put some people on your heart. Maybe they're close to you. Maybe they're acquaintances that you breeze past. Come have at least a few, right? Jot their names down. And then find a way to remind yourself of that every day, whatever that looks like for you. Some people write, they write a little note card, they stick it in their wallet or their purse. Some people do the sticky on the PC screen, right? The sticky on the mirror so that when you're, what, shaving, brushing your teeth, whatever it is you do, right? That would be another area. And then he specifically says, pray specifically for that individual. And pray specific, right? Name them to a certain extent to kind of know if God's answering that prayer so that you recognize that and pray specifically. So we've only got a couple of minutes. What I would like you to do right now is I'd like you to break up into your groups and I'd like you to share with one another if there are certain people in your life that you're praying or want to pray, if God's put that on your heart, for salvation. And if He hasn't, that's okay as well. But just share among yourself of the types of people that are on your heart that you either want to be praying for or are already praying for. We're only going to take a couple of minutes because they're just outside already. So I almost did it. I didn't. So we'll just take 3 or 4 minutes. Real quick, and just talk through that real quick.
Thank you. I'm talking about our joint.